So our second Amy Rains Milenkov, is going to talk to us today about health, pregnancy, and prostitution. So Dr. Rains Milenkov is an assistant professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of North Texas Health Sciences Center in Fort Worth. Prior to her academic appointment in 2010, she spent over 10 years in public health practice. Her research and practice experience has focused on women's health, and in particular, the reproductive health of vulnerable populations, including refugee women, immigrants, and prostituting women. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. I'm glad to see as many people here. I wasn't sure what to expect on the last day. So the topic of my presentation is pregnancy and prostitution, and I have nothing to disclose. So if I could start with an image that's a metaphor for what I'm about to talk about today, which is a picture of an abandoned and neglected baby stroller on top of a railroad track. And as you'll see as I go through, it's not a pretty story that I'm going to talk about. And unless something happens at many different levels in our society, the women, these vulnerable women and their children will continue to suffer. So the objectives of the presentation, I'm going to describe the study participants, their pregnancies and their outcomes, identify some of the contextual and behavioral factors influencing their health and these outcomes before and also after entering prostitution, and discuss how applying a life course perspective is needed to guide practice interventions for this very vulnerable population of women and their children. So this was the problem that came about, and this actually emanated from my practice experience. I had developed and implemented a program focusing on improving the health of non-pregnant women in our community. And because of our referral streams, we began to get more and more women that had been involved in prostitution. So I was interested in what were their pregnancy experiences, their outcomes, their needs. So I went to the literature, being a student at the same time as being a public health practitioner, and really it said nothing, which is a mystery because most women will become pregnant. And we know that women that are in prostitution engage in different forms of sex, but also vaginal, heterosexual intercourse. We know that that's how reproduction happens most of the time. There's some other ways, but for the majority of, reproduction, that's how it happens. And we know from the prostitution literature, and there's a lot of it, that there's many risks that these women face on a daily basis while they're out, either in the streets or in different locations. Yet, again, these women are not seen through the maternal health perspective or through that lens. So this was the gap in the literature that I identified. Although we know a lot about pregnancy, we're learning more and more every day, we know a lot about some of the risks that women, particularly in street-level prostitution, face, as I mentioned earlier, and more information emerging about the preconception health of different subpopulations of women. But taken together, very little about women that have had involvement in prostitution and their pregnancy experiences. So the purpose of my study, and this was a larger study, was to explore the health and pregnancy experiences among a sample of women with either current or previous involvement in prostitution. It was a qualitative approach for reasons that are obvious, that first I didn't know much, or no one really knew much about this population, so it needed to be exploratory in nature. It's a challenging population to find, to locate. It's obviously illegal, it's stigmatized in some communities probably more than others. And there's the issue of access. How are you going to find these women? How are you going to recruit them? You can't use the same kind of methodology or recruitment strategies you use in other kinds of studies. And context is critical to understanding the situation. And my intention was to gather really a detailed account from their perspective and in their own words. So the research was designed, I used purpose of sampling. So I recruited women that could tell me about my research topic, research study. So that was women that had experience in prostitution, either currently or previous. Some of the recruitment strategies was direct recruitment off of the streets. Key informants and snowball sampling, where I would give those that may have contact with women that fit the criteria, which was 18 years of age and older and spoke Spanish, spoke only English and had experience in prostitution. And I would give them a card that just said my name and I was doing a study on and my contact information on pregnancy, but nothing about prostitution. And then they would give the card to women and women would call me and then I would set up and have for an interview. So I used an interview guide that had both semi-structured and structured questions asking about their childhood background, prostitution history, reproductive history and outcomes, behavioral and emotional responses, contraception behavior, pregnancy intentions, and also health behaviors and healthcare access. And I also asked them about how would you recommend that practitioners reach out and to provide assistance and resources. So I conducted this study between July 2009 and November. In-depth interview was the primary data source, although I also did field notes and observations. So the interviews were on the spot or during a prearranged appointment. Say they would call me and we would arrange to meet at a different mutually acceptable location and time. The interviews ranged from as short as an hour to up to 3 hours with the women, and they were audio recorded. And they took place in the streets, in the homes of the participants, in my car, often for safety reasons, restaurants, workplaces, a variety of locations. And women were compensated with a $25 Walgreens gift card. It's a pharmacy, I suppose, everywhere, for their time in the study. And also a list of women's health resources. And this list I had compiled, having worked in the community for so long, there was very targeted resources, names, contact people, direct numbers that they could contact people for assistance. So let me tell you a little bit about this setting. So it's in Fort Worth, Texas, a very conservative community, probably the most conservative city in a very conservative state. Not a lot of resources for this population. No particular program at the time was serving women that were on the streets. In four areas of high prostitution activity, that was through observation and also through areas where high risk for prostitution activity. So not a big area, and most of the women had either prostituted in that very area or in 17 of the women that I interviewed, there's 20 in all, live in the area. So just a picture of one of the areas. A few more pictures to give you an idea. You can see the skyline of Fort Worth, and this is an old, because every city has them, used to be a thriving highway, but now it has the plasma donation centers, and it has the car lots, and it has the rent-a-centers, and so forth, those kind of businesses. And this is actually the highest area of prostitution activity. And there's really not very much going on, a lot of abandoned buildings, except the biggest business in the area, which actually came up over and over again in the transcript, was a pickle factory, the Best Made Pickle Factory. And so a lot of things would be, well, I was over by the pickle factory, or, well, if you turn left at the pickle factory and go over the railroad track. So that was kind of an interesting theme that I wasn't expecting coming up through my interviews, was this the importance of this pickle factory. And then across the street from it is Sugar Daddy's Bar and Grill. So the data analysis, and this is misleading because anyone who's ever done qualitative data knows there's much more paper involved than that. But it gives you an idea of, it was a combination of case studies, ethnography, and framework analysis, a lot of matrices comparing cases across from each other. I used used in vivo to manage and organize it, along with the cards, the cutouts, and all around the house. But also used quantitative coded information or things that already lent themselves to quantitative data. And although it's qualitative in nature, most of the information I'll present today is quantitative. So these are very broad themes. First, remember starting out with, well, pregnancy is not mentioned. If pregnancy is mentioned in the literature, it's in this way. It's, well, and this many women had children. It's kind of not part of the research study at all. Only 11 studies were found that dedicated significant attention to children or pregnancy, and only 3 where pregnancy was the study primary study variable. So yes, women become pregnant. They have children. They had children before they entered prostitution, during times when they would leave prostitution and come back, and after exiting. And that they had poor pregnancy outcomes, whether they were involved in prostitution or not. So some description of the participants. There were 20 women. They ranged in age from the young at 19 to 57 years of age. Most of them were Caucasian, followed by African American. Education, most 15 had a high school degree or less, although there was some college graduate and some 2 women with college experience. And most of the women were single at the time, not, you know, divorced or single, but one woman was married and was married before she entered prostitution, during prostitution, and at the time of the interview, she was still she was married to the same partner. And there's ones that were married but had been separated from their husbands for many years. The prostitution history was difficult to when I was doing these interviews because it was fluid. Women would go in and they would go out. Something would turn better in their lives and they would get out of it for a while, and then something would happen and they would go back into prostitution. At the time of the interview, 11 were either currently, 5 actively, like the next day, that day, were involved in prostitution. And the others were in and out of it, 11 for the last 12 months. And then 9 were formerly involved more than 12 months previous. So most of the women entered around the age of 22. It ranged as young as 12 to 34 years of age. And participants primarily engaged in survival sex. So in the literature, that they were trying to either housing or food, and often the case, substance abuse. So several women told me stories of being really hungry. I remember one woman talking about how she really wanted some chicken, and a man said, "Well, if you give me oral sex, then I'll buy you a bucket of chicken." Another woman talked about one of her worst days was when a man drove up and just put outside the window a bag of McDonald's. She subsequently had oral sex with him, and she was able to eat for the day. Most of the women I interviewed, and it has probably to do with my sampling and the women that I was able to reach, did independently. A pimp was not involved, although one of the women had been married to a pimp previously. And in fact, the women in interviewing them were very protective of me. As far as I've got some guidance from the police department as well, where to go, where not to go. And the women were absolutely stay away from the pimps, which is an interesting dynamic in the interviews. So children, there were 43 living children. At the time of the interview, 24 were under the age of 18. You can see there's 7 living with the mothers, but most of them were not. They were either living in child welfare system or adopted, and this is very consistent with the literature, and also consistent with a similar population of women involved in substance abuse. Women reported rough beginnings, 19 having some kind of adverse childhood experience, sexual abuse or physical abuse, parental drug abuse. One woman talked about the murder of her mother. Her abusive stepfather took the younger twins. Another family member took the older children, but no one came and got her. She subsequently went to the streets. So the reproductive history. 19 had been pregnant. 1 was pregnant at the time of the interview and had just recently stopped prostituting, but had been prostituting while pregnant. Had about an average of 3.8 pregnancies each. 17 had given birth, and most became pregnant as adolescents, starting around 17.4 years of age. There were 73 total pregnancies and 72 completed. So as I said, 1 woman was pregnant at the time of the interview. So some of the circumstances surrounding these pregnancies, but have occurred before their first prostitution encounter. 42.5%, again, I say during and between because they were engaged in prostitution and maybe they left, had the baby, but went back. So again, this was fluid, and so about 42.5% had it during this time period. And there were some pregnancies that happened after they exited and had been out for many years. So I counted those that had been out at least 2 years. Pregnancies were a result of relations with husbands, most of them, overall, 73%, 71.2%. But then they also occurred because of rape, prostitution encounters, so these are with clients, unknown, and casual sex partners. So interestingly, similar numbers of pregnancies were from intimate partner as from clients while they were engaged in prostitution. A fact that is supported in the literature is that women rarely use contraception. Only 2 women in my study use contraception ever. But women rarely, if ever, use condoms with their intimate partners. And that's consistent with findings in the literature. So this is kind of what we had. You know, there was 72 possibilities, 72 pregnancies, 72 possible infant lives. But then what happened to the other ones? And that's what I'm going to talk about. So really only about 60% of these pregnancies resulted in the birth of an infant that lived past the first birthday among these 18 women. So if you look at the pregnancy outcomes of prostitution status, we have 48 live births, but then elective abortions, miscarriage, and I have some stars there because one of the women had twins and she was violently attacked and beaten and she miscarried one of the twins, but the other twin survived, was born preterm, and immediately put into the foster care system. Stillbirth, 2 occurring during prostitution. So if you look at the total adverse outcome before 32.4%, let me go to this next one. This is just the same information, but you can see, you know, not that much different. 32.4% ended adversely prior to ending pregnancy as those that happened while they were engaged or in these intermittent times during prostitution. And then, of course, these are small numbers. So if you look at the outcomes of live births by prostitution status, and there's no after because none of these occurred to the pregnancies that happened after. So many of the babies were born preterm and very low birth weight, and one baby was born at 1 pound and I think she said 7 ounces. 5 minutes left, goodness. You can see a lot of different things that are affecting them. And then importantly, 5 infant deaths. Of 20 women, there's 5 infant deaths. 3 that occurred before they entered prostitution and 2 that occurred while they were during it. Syphilis, some of the things that had to do with this. First of all, drug use. 100% of the women that I interviewed had ever used drugs. Most of the pregnancies started out with drug use. Some of the pregnancies that didn't start out with drug use, the women started using drugs during the last trimesters. Smoking prevalent, not seen as a risk at all. Violence, again, I talked about the violence in the pregnancy. Even some of this was from the police. Syphilis that was implicated in some preterm births. And also the pregnancies were unintended. No use of contraception. Substance abuse was one of the largest contributors. And I won't read all of it. I've found through these presentations, y'all can read it faster than I can. But the last thing that the woman asked me, are you a mother? I said, yes. And she says, it's the strongest bond there is. So look at your own child and turn your back on them. Can you imagine something that strong that would make you do that? It's vicious, it's evil, and I don't wish it on my worst enemy. Unintended pregnancy, they didn't think about it. They were getting highs. I didn't think I could become pregnant. I can't ever remember. I wasn't even thinking about my child that was living with my mother. I wasn't even thinking about the possibility I could become pregnant now. And something they saw it as maybe a way to change their life, that things were going bad during my last pregnancy when I had my other children. So, you know, I didn't really mind if I became pregnant because then maybe I would change. And then some thought that their bodies wouldn't allow them to become pregnant. So some social environmental factors, and these across, all this didn't happen when they started prostitution. This occurred before they even entered it. Poverty, unstable housing. I'm talking about living in the shed behind a drug dealer with no running water, and this woman I'm talking about had AIDS. Substance abuse, limited resources, and there was external influences on reproduction. Some of these external influences were condoms. The fact that they really didn't have much control over condoms with their clients, because you think you're going to tell them no, and they're going to be like, okay, no. You're saying that the men are going to have sex with them anyway without a condom. Limited resources and services. I'll let you read this while I tell an example of a woman must have used my name when she went to get help for substance abuse for her contact information, because the substance abuse treatment center called me and said, well, we have a room for whoever. And the best way that I could contact her was to go out and couldn't find her, and was to put a piece of paper on the fence saying, call me, they have a bed for you. Well, by the time she called me, you know, it had been weeks, and there was no longer space for her. So you always look for the negative disconfirming case, and that was Kayla, college graduate, didn't use drugs while she was prostitution, always used contraception. She was doing it for a financial goal when she met it and she left. So it's certainly different than the other stories I talked about. So limitations, goes without saying, not representative, self-reported information. Women were interviewed only once, which I think is a limitation, because I wanted to go back and say, you know, I really didn't understand what you were saying, or could you clarify that? But that opportunity was gone. So there's poor risk and outcomes across the life course. They entered prostitution. They entered the situation with limited coping skills, difficult life circumstances. So prostitution was just another risk in a whole lifetime of risks. So really, we need a life course approach. And these are probably oversimplified. You know, we need to do this, we need to do that. And I think we're still developing how we even implement a life course approach. But the main idea that I want to get across is there's multiple areas of intervention. You don't have to wait till they're in prostitution. You don't have to wait till their pregnancy. I mean, there's a lot of different places that we can intervene and try to provide services to this very vulnerable population of women. And supporting literature, My study found as well that women are receptive, maybe not while they're pregnant, unfortunately, but in that time period where, you know, nurses and doctors and people that see in the healthcare field could really make a difference in getting them into treatment, not just the child being taken away by the foster care system, but what can we do for the mother. So in summary, there's multiple risks, scarce protective factors, and there's too few interventions. And I say since birth, but if you go back really prenatally, some of the women were in the womb already had these detrimental community environmental factors. So, I'll leave you with that. Thank you.